This is Liberation Radio.
Capitalism needs poverty.
A world run by a handful of greedy bankers and CEOs who nobody elected can't possibly last.
Whatever we could do, we're gonna do, especially in continuing to preserve this earth.
Each week, we bring you interviews, commentary, analysis, political developments, and struggles affecting workers throughout the country as a way to build the movement for socialism in the United States.
The revolution will be broadcast.
The only thing that will ever defeat racism will be the defeat of its parents, capitalism and imperialism.
Without smashing mass incarceration, working people of all nationalities cannot have justice.
Liberation Radio is brought to you by the Party for Socialism and Liberation.
Welcome to Liberation Radio. I'm your host, Sean Garcia. On this episode, we speak with Eugene Puryear of the PSO, who recently attended the Movement for Black Lives National Convening in Cleveland, Ohio. But first, we're speaking with Karina Garcia. Karina is an organizer with Justice First, which is a newly founded organization helping to build a movement for low-wage workers and in support of their social and economic rights. Karina, how you doing?
Hey, Sean. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
No problem. So the first thing is kind of give us an overview of who Justice First is and what kind of work you've been doing.
Sure. So we started Justice First. We started a chapter of Justice First here in New York focusing on wage theft and other workers' rights violations. Our first major campaign was around, it was actually in coalition with an organization we've worked with for a long time, Damayan Migrant Workers. They're based here in New York, and they organize mostly Filipino domestic workers. And so we've known them for a long time, and we've organized around a lot of different stuff, and they let us know about a campaign that they were working on. There was a woman named Marichu who, so she'd been working for her employer for 15 years. She asked for one day off, and she's fired. So it's just an incredible, you know, horrible case, and, you know, we decided to come out and do what we can to support it.
Most recently, the campaign that you guys have been working on is around a struggle with some workers at Pure Food and Wine, which is a high-scale kind of vegan restaurant here in New York City. Can you talk about what's going on with that struggle and how you all got part of it?
Yeah. So Pure Food and Wine, we actually heard about it earlier this month. We were just a couple days before the July 4th weekend, actually. There's a labor lawyer that we were in touch with. His name is Ben Dichter, and he let us know that he was working with a group of workers for Pure Food and Wine who had had their wages stolen for the last 2 weeks. And as a matter of fact, even before then. So apparently, this had happened to them where their employer was just like flat out not paying them since December and January. And actually, the story gets thicker. It even goes back to even early, before the July, before that. But in January, the workers decided that enough was enough, and they actually walked off on the job. And so when they walked out, then their employer started to listen to them, and they actually got a lot of press. And the day after, they actually did an interview for New York One, and they talked about the fact that they had been working and not getting paid, you know, for weeks. And this is like, you know, holiday season, like, these are people with families, and the very next day, like, you know, the owner of the restaurant, Sarma Mingalis, she called them, and, you know, she ended up working things out or whatever after they had filed the lawsuit and all this stuff. So the workers ended up actually going back after. So they settled and they got to pay their wages back, and some of the workers ended up leaving, some of the workers ended up coming back. So then fast forward to early July, the same thing happened again. And so this time the workers knew exactly what they wanted to do. They weren't gonna stand for it. And so Ben Dichter actually got in touch with us because we had been working together, and he'd been working with Marichu's case, and he let us know, he called Justice First to basically come on and support. And so it was the day before they were supposed to be paid, and they had already been, you know, a couple weeks without getting paid. And they had decided that if they didn't get paid again, then they were going to start to picket, and they were going to start to bring the fight, you know, to their doorstep. And so since then, every Thursday, they've been having different events to, you know, draw attention to what's happening, to put pressure on the owner. And the case has actually changed quite a bit now. So it turns out after, you know, these weeks of struggling alongside them that this owner has just completely gone, like, AWOL. And so she doesn't even pick up the phone. They don't know where she is. They filed another lawsuit, and she's basically gone. And so now what they've decided to do is they actually, because this is such a sort of beloved restaurant and has, like, customers and the workers who really, you know, it's not just another restaurant for them, actually. You know, they really believe in what they're doing there. A lot of them are vegan, raw food. They believe in, like, ethical sort of businesses. So they actually have, like, a real community in this restaurant, which is, I think, a very rare thing for a lot of restaurant workers who, you know, who are just working hard, but not really feeling like that kind of family thing. But they actually have this family feel, the workers. They really have, like, a sense of, like, the collective. And so they're very invested in the restaurant. So it turns out now, I'm explaining the whole story. There's some other investors who might want to reopen. And so now the struggle has been that the Pure Food and Wine workers are trying to sort of persuade the landlord to allow the business to reopen under a different ownership. And the ownership that would be, you know, respectful of their union and, you know, possibly even working together or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's where the struggle is right now. I have to say one very, very important thing that has happened that, you know, is the thing that really protects you in the future is that they've actually formed a union. Mm-hmm. Which is a hugely, you know, difficult thing to do these days. And they just had their election today, and they won.
That's awesome.
100% of the workers voted for the union. And so they are the Pure Food Workers Restaurant Union.
That's amazing. So what exactly did Justice First do to support the effort of the workers?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, I mean, Justice First came out to, you know, make signs, to bring people out, to support them, like, you know, physically bring, you know, a crowd of a dozen people or whatnot to try to promote what they were doing online. And just be like a support, you know, just being out there with them when they have their events and when they're planning to do the next event, to just be there with them and help them brainstorm. A lot of the workers who are involved now, you know, weren't activists in the past, and so they didn't have the experience of organizing necessarily, but they're experts in what they've been doing, and so you know, it's just kind of it was a really nice way to kind of build off of each other's expertise, and you know, some of us, we have organizing backgrounds from different struggles, and they have the actual experience of working at this restaurant and loving this restaurant, loving what they do, and wanting to be paid for it and wanting to be respected. And so, you know, we really are taking their leadership and, like, being supportive and coming, whether that's helping them, you know, figure out what their next thing is going to be or like, you know, in terms of brainstorming, or just coming out and being there and trying to get other people to come out and support them too. One of the things that they've done is they've circulated a petition on change.org to try to, you know, really show the landlord that a lot of people are really invested in this, that they want this restaurant back, that they respect what the stand that the Pure Food and Wine workers are taking, and that, you know, they want the restaurant to reopen under a different ownership. And so we're really trying to get people to, you know, go on change.org and do that. And, you know, physically we've been able to get, you know, a few hundred petitions by just being out there, talking to people on the street and in every one of those different pickets. But we've also been able to get a few hundred signatures by circulating it online. So, you know, for anybody who's listening now, that's one really concrete way that you could show your support for these workers.
And where exactly can we find it online to find the petition and to find information about the struggle?
Yeah, so you have, on change.org, if you just look up, you know, Pure Food and Wine Workers, you'll find it. And they also have a Facebook page, Reclaim Pure Food and Wine. And so you can go onto their page, you can like their page, you can send them a message, you can send them, you know, your support and solidarity. It's tremendous what they're doing, and it's so hard. You know, sometimes it's when you're organizing, it's easier to stand up for other people's rights than it is to stand up for your own. And they're standing up for their own, and by taking this stand, they're really leading the way, and they're showing other workers that they can stand up too, and that they can win.
Awesome. So we have another minute here. I just wanted real quickly before we wrap up to talk about, there's a big announcement. We have a grand opening, a joint effort, a collaborative effort of Justice First, the Party for Socialism and Liberation, Revolutionary Fitness, and the Answer Coalition are actually opening up a new center here in New York City. Can you talk about what that center is going to look like and what's the event looking like on Saturday?
I'm so excited about it. The center is a beautiful place. You know, you mentioned some of the different organizations that are going to be there. You know, it's in the heart of El Barrio, 116th and Park. We're so excited about it, you know, to be able to have a place where people in the community can, you know, fight for their rights, right? It's not even just one thing. Fighting for their rights as workers, as women, you know, as people of color, you know, fighting for their wellness, right? With Revolutionary Fitness, to have all of these places in one place is such a tremendous thing. It's so inspiring. It's so exciting. And, you know, this is something that's very special. It's we're not founded by any big foundation. We don't have any corporations funding us. This is like poor working class people giving their time and money. This is a people center. It gives us a lot of independence, and it means that we can fight for what we want to fight for, how we want to fight, and we don't have to be restricted by you know, I don't know, some foundation. Mm. Which is fine if you know, get foundation money, but this is something special. This is something different. It's not easy to do, but you know, it's important, and it shows that you can do it.
So this Saturday in New York City, we have a grand opening event. Can you talk about how that's going to look like throughout the day?
Yeah, absolutely. So Sunday, August 1st, from 12 to 3 p.m., we're going to have an open house. And so we're just going to, you know, have people tabling from all of the different organizations. We want people from the community to come in. We want to show them the space. We want to tell them a little bit about what they can expect. The different kinds of events that we're going to be having regularly, whether that's, you know, film showings, educational, open mics, Know Your Rights trainings, all of the different things that we'll be providing. And then from 6 to 9, we're going to have a nice party. We're going to celebrate all the hard work we've been doing over the last few months and get a chance to really thank all of our allies and all of our volunteers and everybody who's helped to build this place, whether it was, you know, moving boxes or putting up ceilings or walls or painting, all the things that we had to do to make it happen. It's going to be a really, really special night.
Awesome. We're excited. All right, Karina, thanks so much for coming on. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you.
My mama was raised in the era when clean water was only served to the fairer skin. Doing clothes, you would have thought I had help, but they wasn't satisfied unless I picked the cotton myself. You see, it's broke, bringing race him, that's that don't touch anything in the stove. And it's rich, bringing race him, that's that come in, please buy more. What you want? A Bentley, fur coat, a diamond chain? All you blacks want all the same thing. Used to only be niggas, everybody playing. Spending anything on Alexander Wang, new slaves. You see his leaders and his followers. know these Maybach keys. I wear my heart on the sleeve. I know if we the new slaves, I see the blood on the leaves. I see the blood on the leaves. I see the blood on the leaves. I know that we the new slaves. I see the blood on the leaves. They throwing hate at me, want me to stay at ease. You and your corporation, y'all niggas can't control me. I know that we the new slave. I know that we the new slave. I'm about to wild the fuck out. I'm going Bobby Boucher. I know that bitch so ain't free. You didn't see me. Y'all throwing contracts at me.
So we're speaking with Eugene Puryear, member of the Party for Socialism and Liberation in DC, and also organizer of the Answer Coalition and part of the Stop Police Terror Project in DC. Eugene, can you tell us and give us a quick overview and scope of the size of the conference that you just attended in Cleveland?
Sure. So the Movement for Black Lives National Convening, which just took place over the last weekend, the 24th to the 26th of July, was, you know, a very large conference. It came together. It was really sort of a number of folks from a lot of different areas of both the country and more or less different movements. But I think the name Movement for Black Lives kind of speaks to that, is that really, you know, we really have people who are working in a lot of different areas, but see that sort of the work around wages and so on and so forth to be connected to the issue of police violence. So I thought it was a very good, about 1,500 people. Almost everyone there seemed to be an organizer, which I thought was really impressive. There was just a lot of work going on, and there was a really strong presence as well from the LGBTQ community, and I thought that was powerful, and we had some good moments there.
So why was it so important to do this conference right now?
Well, you know, I think that it's particularly important to do this conference right now because I think what we're starting to see, not I think, I know really, what we're starting to see is the police and the supporters of the sort of, you know, I guess you could call it the militarized policing mass incarceration complex, if you will, because I think we're really starting to see how these two things are connected. I mean, mass incarceration first jumped up as a big issue first, and then militarized policing, of course, we've seen the rising of the Black Lives Matter movement. But certainly, I think that the significance of this is that those forces are starting to develop a discourse. They're starting to try to link to the issue of criminality, and you see it happen in New York. Obviously, it failed there because the crime rate didn't spike, but also in Baltimore, this issue of police officers striking, if you will, or working to rule, doing some sort of job action is how I guess you would describe it, to try maybe even more than just not quote-unquote doing their job, because that's not that much about crime anyway, but social control. But at the end of the day, I think what we have to recognize is that at this moment, what we've done is that really the movement back-footed the system, thinking that the issue of police brutality was rising, police terror, it was starting to bleed into other issues faced by people in the so-called ghetto, and now you have these forces of social control using militarized police and mass incarceration fighting back. So coming together on one accord, or not necessarily on one accord, but at least to talk and to discuss what's going on in this movement, what needs to happen, I think is important as the response to the Black Lives Matter starts from those who support this kind of police terrorism. We have to make sure that the response becomes unified, and I think that the struggle continues and escalates.
And actually, can you speak about the significance of the incident of police brutality at the end of the conference?
Sure. And I think what really, this really links to that, what I was just saying, is the police in Cleveland wanting to make a point, trying to intimidate people. And they waited, you know, it's cowardly on their part because they waited until after a number of people left the conference, since this incident happened after the conference, hoping that the movement would be weak. But I think what we've seen is that the overwhelming response has certainly meant that what they intended to happen, which is intimidation of the movement, only fueled the fire of people to go forward. But I think it is significant because I believe that it's indicative. And you connect that with the issue of the Louisville Fraternal Order of Police intimating that they take action against the Black Lives Matter movement, perhaps in an extra legal fashion. And I think that, quite frankly, what we're seeing is the police are willing to take the gloves off a little bit to try to push back this movement, as they always have, and they've always repressed movements that have challenged them and that challenged the system that they pretend.
And what do you feel about the moment?
And I should say, yeah, just to add, that's a system of poverty, a system of unemployment, a system of racism. And I think that's what's important to recognize, is that what we're seeing is the rising up of a movement against a system that it really entrenches these terrible values. And I think that point needs to be made as well.
Right. And I was just going to say, what do you think about the momentum in the Black Lives Matter movement coming out of this conference? What do you think the momentum is like?
I thought it was encouraging, as I mentioned at the top, to see the depth and the breadth. I mean, there really was no one classification. Literally every part of the country is represented. There was a big contingent of people there working with the Fight for 15, for instance, in a number of cities, and other labor, quote-unquote labor issues, or direct working class organizing and with depressed people, whether it's around housing, whether it's around healthcare, whether it's around jobs. I mean, there is so much of that happening that it's difficult to see how all that in motion, 1,500 people who are there all over the country, how there isn't a huge amount of potential to move forward. I think the question, of course, is, will we seize that opportunity? I think of the people in the conference, I felt the general feel was that we would. I feel a lot of people there were able to strengthen their networks and were in the conversations myself and others were having, really thinking about doing concrete work together, not just making connections. So I think the momentum is very good. We'll have to see. I mean, it's always difficult to know what's going to happen in the future, but I think obviously the issue is still with us, as we've seen with Sandra Bland, of course, most recently making the big national news, but then all the names that we haven't heard. And at the end of the day, I think we're not going to put this genie back in the bottle. Something has really been unleashed, this uprising against racism. And I think we have a very unique opportunity here. So ultimately, if it's going to be more than I think, and I know looking back that this definitely happens, we're going to have to escalate the struggle, as I was mentioning earlier. But certainly the human materials very much seems to be there. I thought it was fantastic to get a sense of the work happening.
And we're heading into election season in 2016. Can you talk about what you think the effect will be on the Black Lives Matter movement?
Well, it'll maybe be significant in one way or another. I mean, certainly on the Democratic side of the coin, people are stressing the issue of criminal justice reform, quote unquote. Even Martin O'Malley, who, as we know, really bottom-lined the system of police, just absolute terrorism in Baltimore that was revealed, the number of lawsuits and things of that nature that were settled because these police officers were guilty of people who should be in prison. You know, that was him, zero tolerance. But nevertheless, even that guy is genuflecting right now before the Black Lives Matter movement, as are they all. But at the end of the day, we're going to have to, I mean, we'd never know until they were elected, but that's one side of the coin. On the Republican side, no one's really talking about it that much except for Rand Paul. You know, perhaps Mike Huckabee will pick it up. He got some flack the last time he ran about when he was governor of Arkansas, pardoning too many criminals. So-called criminals, I should say. You know, we'll see. I think it's way too early to tell right now what's going to happen in this election or who's going to shake out to be the real candidates. So we have to take almost everything that happens now with a little bit of a grain of salt, because as the drill down happens, as the debates happen, as hopefully this movement challenges these candidates, not just in an abstract way, but by forcing them to take positions on the things that we decide, not telling them make an agenda and we'll approve it, but telling them what the agenda is and forcing them to speak to it at the very least. It won't be until that really starts to happen in a real way that we'll have any sense, I think, of what the holds. I don't think at the conference, for those who may be interested, there was any big push for any candidate at all. That was not really something that was evident. There was some discussion, but certainly I think it's too early.
Right. And if you had just one takeaway from the conference, what would it be?
Well, maybe this was the thread running through it all, but I would say unity and diversity. There was a really unfortunate incident that took place on the first night where there was a party, you know, we have a party, and it was in a club that was rented out, and truly unfortunately, somebody asked security to remove a trans person from a bathroom because they were quote unquote the wrong gender, and security bodily removed that person. Certainly that was an ugly incident, but it did lead, I think, to, I don't know if it's the best moment of the conference, but certainly the most educational, when there's, as I said earlier, a large presence in the LGBTQ community, but certainly from the trans community, and they made their voices heard and gave a lot of very interesting comments, recommendations, made some demands on the conference that I thought really advanced the understanding in a helpful way of the whole conference of trans issues. And I thought it actually brought the conference closer together, and certainly the esprit de corps, if you will, between the attendees seemed to be much higher after hearing from the experience of trans people. So at the end of the day, even though it was a really ugly incident, I thought it ended up becoming something that was a rallying point, a political and a moral, cultural rallying point that really marked a change in this movement and the importance of having a lot of different type of people there, but having people in a complete mode of acceptance. We're not all the same, but certainly we're all here for a reason. The Movement for Black Lives National Convening, and we're all in this fight together. It affects us in the same way in different ways, but certainly the white supremacy and the racism that overhangs it in support of this vicious capitalist system is the bottom line. So the unity and diversity, I thought, was very powerful. And whatever differences people may have had, I certainly felt that leaving it, most people were feeling very good about what happened.
Thanks so much, Eugene. That's all for Liberation Radio. I'm Sean Garcia. Please remember this program is available free for broadcast by community and public radio stations. You can encourage your local radio station to air Liberation Radio. They can visit liberationradio.org for details. Tune in next week for more from the Struggle for Justice.
You have been listening to Liberation Radio, a weekly program from the Party for Socialism and Liberation. You can find us online at liberationradio.org to listen to past shows and connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. Some of what you heard during this program are Creative Commons licensed compositions. Our theme music and some music segments were performed by Six Fingers and used with permission of the artists. Liberation Radio is produced by the Party for Socialism and Liberation to help build the struggle for socialism in the United States. The PSL is a party of activists and organizers. We are in the streets at the demonstrations and picket lines, opposing cutbacks and attacks on workers, standing up to police brutality, fighting for immigrant rights, and struggling against racism, sexism, homophobia, and all forms of bigotry. We stand in solidarity with oppressed peoples around the world resisting imperialism. We believe the crimes of capitalism call for a new kind of society, and we are committed to fighting for it. To find a PSL branch near you, see our upcoming events and learn more about how you can get involved. PSLweb.org. Again, that's PSLweb.org. Also, the PSL's Liberation newspaper online at liberationnews.org, where you can read our news articles and analysis or purchase a subscription to the print edition. Thank you for listening.